Hey, this is Lori from Hike. I've got to tell you, it's been amazing to be able to bring you content on the Midwest, to be able to highlight the trails, the people, the organizations, and some of the hidden gems of the Great Lakes. I promise you, we've got some more great content coming about the Midwest and also beyond. Before I get into this week's guest, I wanted to give a shout out and thank you for my latest 5-star review. It's titled A Great Find. Loving these episodes, humble, engaging, and inspiring. Thank you, Poetic Hiker, out in Canada. I appreciate your support. So today's guest is Sarah Waite. She's a fellow Midwesterner, and we not only get to talk about her experience backpacking El Royal, which is a Michigan national park, but we also get into her experiences in Death Valley and her attempt of completing the Wonderland Trail just last month. Sarah is a big advocate of recreate responsibly and leave no trace. She's a Women Who Explore ambassador, and next year she is going to be a Trek ambassador for the Superior Hiking Trail, another trail that really highlights the beauty of the Midwest. We take an honest look at the struggles that can occur when you're a beginner at backpacking, and also the challenges that we've had with COVID, and you know, those hard decisions that we have to make sometimes on the trail. I know you'll enjoy this conversation, so take a listen to Sarah. You can find her at Lost and Found Outdoors on social media, and of course, links will be in the show notes. All right, so I am here today with Sarah Waite. Hey, Sarah, thanks for joining.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so where are you located out of?
So I'm from Northeast Ohio, kind of near the like Kent, Akron area.
Okay. All right. So you're also a Midwestern gal.
I am, yes. Midwest based.
Yeah, so I'm excited to bring you on so we can talk about hiking in the Midwest, but then also about some of the other adventures you've been on.
Definitely.
Were you born in Ohio?
So I was actually born in Texas.
So the South.
Yeah. So my mom was in the military for a few years, and she was stationed in Fort Bliss, El Paso. So that's where both my brother and I were actually born in Texas. And then we moved up to Ohio when I was like only a year old. So I more or less consider myself Midwest born and raised, just not minus a year.
No, for sure. So when you were young, I mean, how did you like really know that you love the outdoors? Has it always been part of your life, or was it something you kind of grew into as you got older?
It was always a part of my life, but I would say definitely when I was younger, it was more of a forced part. My brother was in Boy Scouts. My dad was a scout leader. So they would go, you know, on hikes and camps and stuff like that. And, you know, I would always get dragged along on hikes or bike trips or this and that. And at the time, I would say definitely I was probably more interested in like typical teenage girl things than like being outside. It wasn't until college that I really kind of realized that I loved being outdoors way more than anything else.
So what were some of your first experiences then, like once you started truly being interested in the outdoors? Were you doing some camping, day hike? Was there evolution to getting to backpacking?
So it started mainly as day hikes. My family had always brought us to Cuyahoga Valley National Park. We always lived my whole life pretty much within a 1-hour drive of that. So that was kind of something we would do a lot on the weekends. So I was a student at Kent State University, which is not too far from Cuyahoga Valley. And so I would start hiking there just kind of in between classes. And Kent itself has this like really nice hike and bike kind of like a towpath trail kind of thing that goes along this river edge and stuff like that. So just kind of the local trails really got me into hiking more. And I had a lot of really stressful things going on in my personal life at the time. So it was very, very therapeutic for me. And that was really what began my interest in the outdoors.
Yeah, I do find hiking very cathartic, like you said, therapeutic, whatever we're going through. I think it just helps us process things. I know when I get stressed out, being on the trail is like the top, you know, thing I want to do.
Oh, yeah. I completely agree. I feel like almost all of my biggest life decisions I made, like, while hiking, I swear. Just, like, the time to be alone and actually think and, like, actually hear your own inner voice for once. It's so nice to kind of have that break and really be able to think things through.
No, that's an interesting thought of, you know, listening to your inner voice. And I think sometimes with a lot of distractions, that's challenging. And kind of learning to feel that confidence that comes from, you know, being successful on the trail and, you know, even not successful, but the things that you learn from all of those experiences are important.
I completely agree. I feel like that's definitely the biggest thing that hiking has helped me kind of deal with, of just kind of redefining what success and failure is and kind of using that to approach my own life a little in more healthier ways, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So you're in Ohio and you were doing, you know, local hikes and things like that. So when did you venture out beyond the Midwest or basically like, where else in the Midwest were you going to?
So my first actual backpacking trip was in, it's called Mohican State Park. I know anyone from Ohio is going to know of Mohican, but for people that don't, it's pretty much one of the few backpacking areas kind of in the northern part of Ohio. We don't really have a ton of really long trails, and Mohican does have some longer trails, and they have campsites that are a little more primitive that you have to like actually walk to instead of just park and then camp right next to, which is fun, but not quite backpacking. So Mohican was the first place I went. It's kind of more of a populated place, I guess. So that was kind of a really nice first backpacking experience. And then after that, shortly after my first backpacking trip, I had started dating, who is now my fiance, actually. His name's Ben. And we went to Vegas in Southern Nevada. We did a bunch of backpacking around there within like the first few months of us dating. And that kind of sparked us. Like, we just constantly started backpacking. We just fell in love with that like Southwest area. And we've gone back every year that we've been together at least once. So it's been, great.
There's nothing better than finding that person who loves to hike with you and bonding over that. And yeah. And congratulations on your engagement. Thank you. And we'll touch on that a little later too. So I know that's it's a good story too. So you're, I guess, seeing different environments, you know, going out, like you said, to Vegas, doing, you know, local hikes. I know that you've also did El Royal. So I was interested in hearing about that. It's on my wish list. It's on my bucket list. I just love the idea of, you know, going way up in the UP, you know, taking a ferry or a charter and just being dropped off on this island. So just let's talk about that experience.
Yeah, that was definitely a trip unlike anything I've ever done. I had actually never even heard of the park until Ben had actually mentioned it. And he said that that was a lifelong dream of his to go there. His dad had always wanted to go and had never been able to. He just isn't in like the health for it anymore. And so that was somewhere that Ben really wanted to go and kind of be able to carry out that family dream. So when he told me about it, we started looking into it. We were like, well, I mean, you know, we're Northeast Ohio. Like, it's a long drive, but like, it's doable. And, you know, I mean, we haven't done a trip this big before. And, you know, so we maybe get off work and stuff. And so we started planning it bit by bit. And then when we realized like, oh, okay, so this is actually doable, you know, it was just so much fun. We ended up doing 11 days because the way we were thinking, we could either hike. So we wanted to hike the whole island.
Okay. So there's like a perimeter trail?
Yeah. So there's Rock Harbor and Wendigo, which are the two ports on either end of the island. And you can start at either end. There's a ferry to get to both sides. And then from Wendigo, you can take a seaplane over as well. So it was closer for us to drive to Rock Harbor. Well, to drive to the area where we would take the ferry to Rock Harbor.
And that's like going like through Minnesota, right?
So you can go through Minnesota. We ended up going all the way up through Michigan and all the way.
Oh, you did.
Yeah. So
it's the long way, I think.
Yeah. So it was, we had never been to Michigan before actually at all. So it was our first time.
Oh my gosh. You like.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. So yeah. So we kind of figured, well, we need to go through Michigan. So yeah, we went all the way up through Michigan over Mackinac Bridge, drove through the UP, and then we got to Houghton, Michigan, which is kind of really far up north, but a beautiful, beautiful small town. We absolutely loved it there. Everyone was just so unbelievably friendly. Like, we kept saying the whole time, like, man, this is just like the better Ohio. Like, I love Ohio, but man, Michigan is just beautiful.
Yes, now you're right. It's really beautiful. I think it surprises people, especially kind of going up into the UP, because when you go through there, you're seeing like there's some hills, there's, you know, different geology than you kind of think, with Michigan being, you know, flat and stuff like that. But it is quite a haul to go all the way up. So when you got to Houghton, what did you do next?
So when we got to Houghton, we stayed in a hotel right in the downtown area. And we just used that night before to kind of do any last minute rearranging of our packs, stuff like that. Just get one last like actual night's sleep in a bed before we went like over a week without one. So that was kind of nice. So yeah, so we stayed at the hotel. And then the next morning, we went to the ferry, which is docked right in Houghton. You could actually, like, the night before, we had walked downtown and you could see the Ferry Ranger 3 just sitting out. So it was kind of cool to be able to see, like, oh, this is what we're going to be on tomorrow. So that was really exciting.
How long does it take from the ferry from Houghton to the island?
So that was a really long, a long boat ride. It was 6 hours.
Oh, wow. Because I think there's a ferry from the Minnesota side, which is maybe 3 or something. So that's, I was trying to gauge 6. Wow. This was like an adventure to get there.
It took us 12 hours of driving, then 6 hours on a boat. And then when we finally landed that day, that same day, we had to hike 8 miles to our first campground.
Wow.
So it was just like the longest day ever.
So you're like, if you get through this day, we are going to make it.
Like, I had never gone backpacking for any more than like 4 days, like 3 nights, 4 days by that point. And to just jump into 100 miles, 11 days, that first day, I was just thinking like, oh my God, what did I get myself into? Like, can I even do this? But we did, and it was a great time. But I was definitely having doubts at the beginning.
So that's, you know, there's the mental part of it that you're just kind of talking about. But what about the gear and things like, what did you do? What did you bring with you to kind of prepare for this longer experience?
So I would definitely say I overpacked on this trip for sure. Like, my pack weighed more than I would definitely do it now. But I had, so my pack is Osprey. I love their packs personally. Just for me, they're the most comfortable. So I had an Osprey pack, and then our tent, we used a Nemo Hornet, I believe it was Nemo Hornet, but it was only a one person and we used it for both of us.
Well, you gotta know at that point you knew that you liked each other. So
We actually only this year was the first year we finally bought a two-person tent. After backpacking over 2 years together, we finally upgraded. Yeah, it feels like that. Because I had worked at a gear store before, so I bought the tent and stuff when I worked there. And we just figured, like, well, financially, I mean, doesn't make sense. We have a tent, it works. So we just kept using it till it was just too much anymore.
I gotta say, well, I have a two-person tent and a one-person, and I got the one person just for like backpacking because it's lighter, but I like the two person because honestly, it's like, it's so confined where, you know, you just feel like in the two person, I'm a little safer. Oh, yeah. I have this space. There's no like wildlife that's going to come up, and you know, it's all mental, you know, mind playing tricks on me, but yeah. So, okay. So you had the tent, you had your Osprey pack. You said you definitely overpacked for this trip.
Yes.
Did you have to bring all your food?
So we didn't find out until after we had already hiked all the way down to Windigo. But apparently you can I think they said you could mail your food in advance or something like that. So you basically could do like a food cache at Windigo, which we didn't know when we did that. So we had all of our food for the whole trip, all 11 days. We were carrying it with us.
Well, at least there's two of you. You can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was kind of unfortunate because since we had never backpacked this much, we didn't quite expect how hungry we would be, especially by like day 8, day 9 on. And we just did not have enough food. Like, on one of our last days, we were just eating like a bag of Triscuits that we had left because we were just like out of food.
And oh my gosh. So hiker kind of miserable.
Yeah, it was very real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I've never dropped food on the ground and then looked at it and just been like, well, I guess I'm eating it anyways. That's where I was at on that trip.
Oh, so, okay. So let's go back to the trail itself.
Yeah. So there's two different trails. So there's the Greenstone Ridge Trail, and then I think it's called the Minone Ridge. I honestly am not 100% sure how to pronounce it, but we did the Greenstone Ridge, which is the one that goes through the center of the island. And then Minone Ridge goes around like the northern shoreline. So you can take those, and they both start and end around Rock Harbor. The Minone Ridge ends like just a little bit before, so you would still have to get like down, but it wouldn't be like that far. But a lot of people will do that as like a loop if you were going to backpack the whole island. But we had read that it's more primitive, and we weren't sure. We had called the ranger's office initially, and and since they can't really gauge what people's levels are, they don't want to tell people like, yeah, you're qualified to do that, and then you might not be. So we weren't sure, like, well, what does that mean? Like, is the trail there? Is this more bushwhacking? Are there blazes? Like, we weren't sure what we were getting into. So we decided to just do the Greenstone Ridge out and back. And then, especially when we had gotten there on the ferry over, we had been told by a ranger about how some guy had gotten lost in the swamp off of the Minone Ridge Trail. So we were like, yeah, well, we don't really want to take our chances. Like, we've never done anything like this before. Like, better just stay on the safer side for the first visit up. But if we went again, we will definitely do the perimeter trail. But for this time, we just did the Greenstone. So we went like through the center of the island.
Okay. So you were saying it was an out and back. So basically not a loop. You're just kind of going through and then coming back. So I guess one question, did you need to just have like a basic backcountry permit? Did you have to say where you're going to camp at? What were the logistics like?
On the ferry ride over on Ranger 3, since that one is a national park owned ship, it's not like a third party private company, they can actually issue like all the permits and stuff like that while you're on the ferry, which was another incentive of why we went with going in Houghton on the Ranger 3 instead of some of the other ones. So on the ride over to Isle Royal on the boat, they kind of do a presentation where they tell you about, you know, the leave no trace principles, and they want everyone to be aware of that. And you have to sign like a little slip saying that, you know, you hear this, that you're going to follow it. And then after that, they give everybody a map. And if you plan on camping outside of, I think it was outside of like just that main front country campground, right? Because there's both Rock Harbor and Wingo each have their own like more front country campground right by the docks. If you plan on camping outside of those, you're supposed to fill out a backcountry permit, and it was free. So basically you're just paying to get to the island. And then when you're on there, actually, now that I think about it, that might not be true. I think for us, because we went on the national park, we didn't have to pay an extra fee. I think that's included with the cost. You might have to pay for a backcountry permit if you don't take the national park one. I'm honestly not 100%
sure. But it's not like you're reserving sites. Primitive sites that you're going to, and
so you pretty much just fill it out and then you turn it into them. Pretty much, I didn't hear anybody saying they didn't get what they wanted, so I'm assuming it's more of just so they know where you're going to be. And then they print off like the official copy, and then they give that to you in like a little bag, and you're just supposed to tie it to, you know, your pack while you're hiking, and then your tent or shelter at night. So it's pretty informal, and we ended up actually getting off permit like on our second day. And then we were off literally almost every single other day until the very end. And it wasn't a big deal, like in the least bit at all.
I know. Like, I think I would get so confused, or just because you kind of think that you know what you're going to do, but every trip I've been on, it never, you know, goes according to plan. So yeah, you need a little bit of flexibility in there. So the Greenstone Trail, like what did it look like? Like what was the trail like? Was it narrow? Were there obstacles? Like, you know, I'm just trying to envision.
I would say the Greenstone Ridge itself was, there was a lot of trees. I was here in the forest a lot of the time. But then there's just these just beautiful rock outcroppings that you'll just come up to, and it's just rock and blueberry bushes growing everywhere. Like, we would stop and eat wild blueberries and thimbleberries like constantly on the trail. there's tons of berries, and then you'd have views of either Lake Superior, or you'd be able to look down and see like other lakes within the within Isle Royale itself. But there's definitely a lot of trees, a lot of forest areas. But it was beautiful, though. My favorite areas were definitely by Windigo, because you get a lot more moose around there. I would say,
I was going to ask you about the wildlife. Yeah,
I would say like 90% of the moose we saw was on like the, what would it be, western half, like the half side by Windigo. That area we saw like the most moose of the whole trip there. So that's probably my favorite area, just because the wildlife is just so much more rich, at least when we were there.
Did you see or hear wolves? Because I think the island does have wolves.
Yeah, we did. Well, we didn't see any, but we did hear them. And there is, we heard them two different nights, which was like one of the most incredible things. I've never heard wolves before, so that was just like truly an experience. And then we were in the area of where wolves apparently were sighted. We were standing by the campground in Windigo. The campground is Washington Creek. So we were standing in the area. We were sharing a tent space with these two women, Jane and Carol, who were just like the sweetest ladies ever. So we were sharing a tent area with them, and we were all kind of standing by the picnic table talking, and there were these two bull moose in the river. And they just suddenly, they were just eating, everything was relaxed, and they just stopped eating and looked up at the shoreline. And then the one took running off in one direction, the other came running towards where we were. So we were all just like running to get out of the way, because we were like, oh my God, he's literally charging right at us. And then shortly after he came running through our campground, a woman comes running around the other side, and she was like, did you see it? Did you see it? There's a wolf there. And we were like, what? Oh my God. Like, no, like, is that why the moose just took off running? Like, so apparently there was one while we were right there, but we didn't see it. But it was an experience, though, to see the moose react in that way, because we were just like, what on earth just happened? It was crazy.
Oh, yeah. That isn't, yeah. And no, you don't want to get in the way of charging at you.
Yeah, it was definitely a perspective shift, because so far up to that point, we had only seen them just being so slow moving and very gentle. And then to see them run, and they're just taking down like branches as they're going, and you're just like, oh my God, like those are huge.
So how long was the trail itself that you did? I mean, because, well, you're doing it out and back. So what was the mileage?
So our total mileage was 101 miles. The Greenstone Ridge itself is about, I think, 40. So we started, because you can't access the Greenstone Ridge directly from Rock Harbor, you have to hike down, like, I think it's called the Daisy Farm Trail, and then you can finally get up onto the Greenstone Ridge. So that added some extra mileage. And then we took 1 0 day in Windigo, where we did, like, they have just, like, a little nature loop around there that we did that day. And then we had one more 0 day when we finally made it back to Rock Harbor. And then there was like a little trail down to Scoville Point, which is my favorite area in the whole park. Honestly, it was just beautiful, rocky crags, and like Lake Superior was just like crashing up on the rocks. It was beautiful. So doing those kind of like little extra side trails ended up rounding up our mileage up to 101. But if you just did like out and back, just the Greenstone, it'd be like closer to like 80, 85.
And you said you did it over the course of 11 days, were you on the island? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So were you wearing boots, trail runners? What was the shoe situation like?
So both Ben and I, because he was on this with me, we both actually had Loa Renegade boots. So we loved those, because with all the rocks and just the terrain, I would say it was pretty uneven for a lot of it. It definitely helped us. On one of the days, Ben had rolled his ankle a little bit, and the boots definitely saved. Yeah, it was like, I think, our third to last day. So it was thankfully pretty close to the end, but it definitely saved from what could have been a worse scenario. And then I know, like, I definitely tripped a couple times. So having the boots definitely helped there, but they were definitely a bit heavier.
Do you use trekking poles at all?
I did. He didn't have any, which for me, they were like a huge game changer. It was my first backpacking trip with them, and it would have been a lot worse without them, especially some of the rock areas that you're going through kind of feels more just like a scramble than really hiking, because some of the rocks are as tall as like up to my waist. So trying to get up over those with like a 40-pound pack on or something, like I need that extra leverage. I'm only 5'3", so like everything is so tall. So I definitely need a little extra help of getting up over things sometimes.
Yeah, no, those are my favorite hikes, the more the scrambles. Those are fun.
I agree.
What year did you do that trip in?
So that was just last year, so 2019.
So once you did that, I mean, that really, you know, you did 11 days out there. That's kind of getting into the longer, you know, backpacking. Yeah. So what did you learn from it? Did you come back and, you know, say, okay, now I want to do more of these longer, you know, not just like 3-4 days, but I want to start kind of looking at the longer trips?
Oh yeah, definitely. Like while we were still there, I was already planning like the next trips that we'd be doing. It's like, well, what about this trail or this trail? So definitely just reaffirmed that, yes, I 100% want to be doing more of this. And it definitely made me realize like, yeah, I think that I'm in good physical health. And then doing something like that, it's always a humbling experience to realize like there's always improvement. You never know everything about your body, about backpacking, nature. Like there's literally a place to grow in every aspect. And so it's always nice to kind of have that kind of reminder, I guess, if you will.
So when you were out in El Royal, it's a national park, but it's not like a really popular where tons of tourists are there. So you talked about running into the two ladies that were sharing tent space with you. Were there a lot of others doing the same thing? Like who did you see many people?
There really weren't a ton of people. The boat ride that we had over was maybe like 3/4 full, which at first when we were going over, I was kind of thinking like, oh, like I thought there weren't supposed to be like a ton of people. And then you get there and you realize like, yeah, I mean, everyone's hiking, everyone's got their own route. So you really don't see a ton of people. The only places that really had a lot of people were Rock Harbor had the most people by far, which even that is like incredibly minimal for a national park. Like, I mean, you could just sit out on a picnic table and have a few minutes go by where there's nobody even walking around, which I feel like for a national park, for the main hub of a park is incredibly rare to have that. But yeah, just the main areas had a lot of people. And then some of those more front country campgrounds, like 3 Mile and Daisy Farm, those had the most people. Those would have like ranger-led programs and stuff like that every so often. Those areas definitely had more people. But once we actually got on the trail and were about like at the halfway point, when we were hiking, we would go like hours without seeing anybody. Every day we would see somebody on the trail, at least one or two people. So it was kind of nice to know that like, all right, like, yeah, like there's people around. Yeah. Like, yep, we're not totally alone. And I don't think we even had one night where we were the only ones at a campground, but we definitely had nights though where there was only like one other group or couple or something like that. So it was the most private trip I've ever been on, which was really nice.
I'm assuming like there's no cell coverage, I'm sure, out there. No. So yeah, were you guys relying on any kind of like a spot or a garment?
So looking back now, I think we were kind of stupid in this regard. We didn't have a garment or anything with us, which now I would not do that again, just because if something does happen, you really have no way to get a hold of anybody. So I would definitely recommend having something, but those are pretty pricey, which is why we didn't have one. So basically what we did is both his parents and my parents knew where we were going, when we should be back, that kind of information. And then when we got back into Rock Harbor, they actually have a cell phone that has a little service that like through Wi-Fi or whatever, and you can pay by the minute. So we called because we have a cat and we're just like obsessed with her. And we were so worried because we've never left her alone for this long. So we called just to find out how our cat was doing. So we're like, yeah, I love you guys. Love you parents. Thanks for watching her. But how's our cat doing? How is she? So that was nice to be able to get a call on like one of the final days, just to make sure that like our apartment wasn't like flooded or something crazy and our pet was okay. But otherwise, yeah, there's no cell service at all.
So I can tell you, like for the Garmin, I have a Garmin inReach Mini. And one of the things, and I'm sure it's like this with the other ones as well, but you can kind of do this monthly plan, but it allows you to suspend it when you're not using it. So it's like, it's called the Freedom Plan. I mean, it's still a subscription. I think it's like $14 a month when you are using it, but it is for peace of mind, right? You know, that if you're out there, you can get some, you know, some help if you need it. But yeah, I like the opportunity to suspend service.
Yeah, that would definitely be nice.
So when you got home, what was then your next adventure that you planned?
Let's see. After that, honestly, I don't remember what we did immediately after that. I think we just did some local little backpacking trips. But then our next like bigger trip, every January, we've flown out to Vegas every year. And then we've always done some sort of backpacking trip outside of like a driving distance of Vegas. This year in January, we flew into Vegas and we drove out to Death Valley. So we spent a few days hiking around Death Valley and then went to Ash Meadows Wildlife Refuge, which is kind of halfway between Vegas and Death Valley area. So we kind of explored those areas. So that was exciting. It was my first time in Death Valley, which was a huge bucket list place for me. So I was really excited.
You went in January, which obviously is a time probably to go because you're not going to melt on the road.
Yeah, for sure.
So what were the weather conditions like for you? How hot did it get in January?
It was honestly kind of perfect. It was just like 60s pretty much during the daytime. And then in the evening, it got pretty cold in the evening, like down into the low 40s. But I mean, I kind of expected that. Like, we've done some camping in the desert before, so we knew like nights can get kind of cold there. But we weren't expecting the wind at night, though. One of the campgrounds that we stayed at was just so incredibly windy. We had set up our camp, our tent and everything, and we drove down to the sand dunes to watch the sunset. And when we got back, our tent was shoved under a picnic table. And the guy came over and told us that the wind had blown his tent and our tent all the way down like this just open desert area. And he ran and grabbed his and ours and he shoved it under the table so it wouldn't fly away. So we were incredibly thankful, but it was crazy.
So what do you do and how do you, I mean, I guess, do you put rocks to weight it down? I'm trying to think of like sand and like that kind of terrain and
yeah.
How do you stake it out?
So we thought the first time we had done a good job staking and we had even put rocks on top of the stakes, which turned out to do absolutely nothing because it was all just completely ripped up anyways. So that night we did our best to get it staked in and then again put rocks on everything. But when we were laying in it, like the wind was so strong, the tent was literally just on our face, like inches from us. And we were just laying there like, oh.
Are you getting any kind of grit all over too? Like is some of the sand picking up?
Yeah, we had a lot of sand in our tent when we woke up. We had the rain fly completely over it and zipped up, but I mean, it doesn't really help that much with that kind of wind and the sand. So we had a ton of sand in the car, or not in the car, in the tent. That next morning when we got up, I think we were the only ones that had actually stayed in the tent because this was a campsite where your car was like right next to your camp spot. So when we got out, we didn't see any other tents. There was just one couple that was just staring at us across the parking lot. And we were like, they probably think we were insane like, for staying crazy in there. But we were like, the car we had rented wasn't big enough for Ben to lay down because he's over 6 foot. So like, I can curl up and be fine in a seat. But for someone who's tall, we did not get an ideal car. So he was like, I'd rather sleep out here.
I'm glad you stuck it out with him. You didn't just go into the car by yourself.
Oh yeah. Definitely thought about it. I know.
Okay. So you did that. And actually I was thinking about, you know, that was in January. It was good that you got that in, you know, before March, because I think March is when everything started shutting down to COVID. So how did COVID change your summer hiking plans or anything related to trips you had?
I mean, like most people, it changed pretty much everything about this year. We were supposed to go to the Adirondacks with my parents for a week. Like my whole family was going to go up for a week to the Adirondacks. We were going to do like backpacking up there and stuff. So that got completely scrapped because that was supposed to be in May. So that's kind of like in the midst when things were getting pretty bad. So that ended up getting scrapped. There's a big birding festival up near Lake Erie that we go to every year. We were going to go up and camp near there again. That got scratched. And then we would do like at least once a month or once every other month. Ben has a group of friends who goes backpacking, so we normally go with them, and we haven't really done anything with them this year. So there's just been a lot of little plans that just got derailed. But our big thing, you know, our Of Wonderland Trail, still we were able to go. So for at least what it's worth, that happened at least.
I know a little bit about the Wonderland Trail. I did have a guest on last season who talked about it, and I know it can be tough to get a permit. So did you try for a permit? Did you do a walk up? How did you arrange it?
So this year we both had applied separately to try and bolster our chances, and we both initially got denied permits. And then once COVID was getting really bad, they ended up doing no walk-up permits for this year. So they ended up reissuing more permits. And in that second wave, Ben ended up getting a permit. So that's how we were lucky enough to get a permit, was just the horrible, unfortunate circumstances that's going on now allowed us to get a permit for this year. So
that's cool, though. I mean, that they at least allowed more people. I mean, I know some people just decided not to travel or not to do their long trips. So when did you go to Washington?
So we went the very end of August. So like the 25th, I think, was when we started the trail. And then it was supposed to be through like the very beginning of September. So very thankfully with the fires and everything, we got back like less than a week before the fires and everything going on, unfortunately.
I'm assuming you flew, because that would be a long drive. It's doable, but you know, we know you can do the long drives.
Yeah.
So you flew?
Yeah, we did fly, which I would not do. I'm not planning on flying again until this pandemic is definitely done. We did not have the greatest experience with flying. So when we had bought tickets, we bought our tickets back in like April, I think. And because we were thinking like, well, by September, August, yeah, you know, things will be better, which is, yeah, for real. And when we bought our tickets, they showed all the middle seats being open. So they were like socially distancing. And then we get there and that's not how it was. The plane was just completely packed. Every seat was filled. So that was unfortunate. And then on our flight back from Seattle, there was a whole family that just like kept taking their masks on and off and had to be told like numerous times. And it was just like,
that's stressful.
Oh my God. Like, yeah. So as soon as we got back, we just like quarantined for 2 weeks. Like we unfortunately still had to work, but we would literally go to work, come home, do nothing else. And our work, both places required masks. So that was at least good, but thankfully we've shown no symptoms or anything. So that's good.
The flying situation I can relate to. I've flown a few times since COVID, and definitely there is this underlying stress. I mean, luckily I've been on two airlines that do have the middle seats open, but I don't know if that really makes a difference.
Yeah, no, I guess when it's like so compact.
I know. So. Yeah. But yeah, luckily, you know, mask up and, you know, wash your hands and just, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess what made you choose Wonderland Trail?
So the big push initially, we were supposed to be going to Mount Rainier actually with a group of friends. We were going to get an Airbnb and then we were just going to do like day hikes and stuff like that around. And then they were going to drop us off. It was either going to be before or after. So it either drop us off at where we needed to be, or they were going to pick us up after finishing the trail. So it was going to be like a whole big trip. We were going to be with friends and then do the trail. And so that was kind of why we figured like, well, if we're going to be in Rainier anyways, might as well do the Wonderland Trail, you know, we're already going to be there. So that was kind of the point of like, well, this is why we're doing this one specifically. But then that trip ended up falling through because of COVID. So we just decided, well, we got permits anyways, might as well do it.
And for our listeners who may not be familiar with the Wonderland Trail, I mean, it's one of those, it's a loop. It's like right under 100 miles. So, you know, it's kind of like a sweet spot kind of trail, yeah, where the loop, the being able to kind of do it within a week or so. But I also know there's a lot of like variables and planning, yeah, and choices. That's one of the things, you know, and there's even these websites where you can go in and put in what you think your itinerary should be. So what kind of planning did you do?
So I read pretty much like every person's blog I could find about the trip, watched YouTube videos, scoured like the national park website, pretty much any content that was Rainier or Wonderland Trail related. I was just trying to like mainstream like everything. And then there was someone from Women of the Wild Midwest who had literally just gotten back from doing the Wonderland Trail, and she did a day-by-day breakdown of her trip. So I was like reading through like her daily account, stuff like that. So that was kind of a lot of the preparation. And then we finally got the Wonderland Trail map and then started breaking down like, okay, this is how many miles between each site, what direction, you know, kind of seeing like what other people's feedback was. Like you could go counterclockwise or clockwise. There's different directions you could go, stuff like that. So it was pretty much just like every detail I would like write down and go through and kind of try and figure out what I thought would work best for us.
So when Ben got the permit, did he have to put in like his suggested route, or how did that work?
So when we applied, applications go live on March 15th. So you apply and you put in the kind of permit that you want, how many days it would be, what campsites that you want. So we had initially applied back then, and they will either accept your permit, like your itinerary as it is, or they'll modify it depending. It's kind of based around like how many campsites are actually available. So that's what happened to ours. Ours got adjusted by less than a day. So we only had 8 days to do the trip, and we had originally applied for 9 or 10 days. So it got shortened a little bit, but we were like, well, you know, I mean, we got permits, we have to try.
Yeah. So 8 days, then you're doing, what on average over like what, 12 miles a day or something, like you had to average out.
Something like that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a mountain. So there's a lot of ups and downs. And I think, I mean, I don't know, was there snow in August in certain places?
Yeah, there was a little bit. There wasn't a ton, which is kind of why we had wanted to go with August into September. It was before the New Year snow, but then late enough into the season that it should be either melted on or enough people have gone over it that it's kind of like more packed down and disintegrated in some areas. So that's kind of why we picked that time of year, is to have the least amount of snow possible. But I mean, being from the Midwest, like we're used to snow, and we weren't too worried about it, but we still didn't want to deal with it in like mountain-esque views.
Did you send food ahead? Did you try to pack again all your food for this trip?
So yeah, we did end up, unfortunately, we did carry all of our food. We had initially planned on doing food caches. We had even gotten our buckets and everything and had planned it out. And then the more we were talking about it, we were getting concerned. We had read a couple reports of people's food either being like tampered with or stuff like that in some of like the caches and stuff. And we were like, well, with everything with COVID and there might not be as many rangers out, we were honestly just a little worried that like, what if that happened? And then like, that could be hugely detrimental to not have food at all. And like, what would we do? So we were a little worried about that. So we decided to carry all of our food, which in hindsight, I would never do that again. I would run the risk of having someone mess with my food over carrying it again. But
did you also need like a bear canister or a bear sack what out there?
So it's not required, but it is recommended. So we ended up doing bear canisters. We each had one.
Okay.
We just figured like, I mean, why even enable a problem that is already having more issues because of, you know, more people going out and leaving food at picnic tables and stuff like that and just feeding wildlife. So we just kind of thought like, we're just going to try and eliminate the problem for ourselves. Just get bear canisters, have something more secure. Plus, you know, it makes for seat at camp. So that's nice.
Yes, true. So what was your pack weight? Do you know?
Yeah, so I started out, my pack was 40 pounds with all my food and water, which isn't too bad, but I would have preferred it to be lighter for doing Rainier.
So where did you start at? What trailhead?
So we started at Longmire, which is like the very southern, that's like the first visitor center area that you get into when you go into the park.
And you know, also I know you wrote, you do blog, so I know you did blog this about your trip and stuff, but what was the experience getting to the park and getting to Longmire?
So that was just, honestly, it was just such a whirlwind because I had never been to the Pacific Northwest before. So this was my first experience like ever in this area. So just like the driving, since we got in, it was late at night. It was like 10 something when our flight had landed in Seattle. So we didn't see like any of the mountain views. We didn't see anything. And then our hotel was right by the airport. So we didn't see any mountains or anything until we were like maybe a good 20 minutes into the drive already. And then we finally like came around a curve and then there was Rainier. And it was just like the most breathtaking moment. I swear, like I had to focus, just be like, nope, you're driving. Like, don't look at the mountain. Don't crash the car. You pay attention. But it was beautiful. And like the winding roads, like I was nervous that all the driving would just be like perilous cliff drops. I was honestly kind of scared about the driving because I thought it was just going to be like horrifying. Everyone that talks about Mount Rainier is just like, oh, the driving, it can be scary. And so like in my head, I was prepared for this like traumatic driving and it was just beautiful. Like luckily I never had to drive past Longmire. So all the driving up to that point was very easy, enjoyable, beautiful winding roads. I didn't have to deal with any of the terrifying drops or anything.
Yeah. And it's so different coming from, you know, whether you, you know, have also like hiked, you know, more of like the East Mountains and things. Yeah. Seeing the Cascades is just, yeah, it's breathtaking. Just, you know, they're just, it's there, you know, there's, it's quite a different experience. So you started at Longmire and how did it go?
So it was fun. So we went counterclockwise. Unfortunately though, we didn't finish the trail. Basically, we got off track on our second night, and unlike our trip out of Isle Royal, where if you get off track and you don't camp at like the campground, your permit says, there at Isle Royal, it's not a big deal at all. But on the Wonderland Trail, everything is mapped out so specifically because it really is accounted for. Every single tent site for every campground is accounted for pretty much. So to get off track, you're basically running the risk of pretty much taking somebody else's camping spot where they have a permit for, which thankfully did not happen. We were lucky enough. The night that we did get off track, nobody else came for that campsite. So it was an empty spot. So we didn't have to deal with any of that. And we were able to talk to the ranger and everything. But they really are pretty strict about, like, if you get off, you need to make up that miles. You need to get back on your permit. Otherwise, a ranger might ask you to leave trail if you're not able to keep the pace that your permit says. So we did have to have kind of a hard conversation with the ranger. And we really wanted to keep going. And we felt like, you know, under a lot of normal circumstances, like a 14, 16 mile day, you know, like in Ohio is like nothing. Like, okay, yeah, we'll just go do that. Not nearly the same with like a 40 pound pack in Mount Rainier. And we kind of realized like I was feeling really beat. And then Ben has a knee injury from like in the past. And so for him, that was just like killing him by the end of the second day. And we knew like, well, we have a 16 mile day and two of the steepest climbs of the whole trail in those 16 miles. And that's what we have to do to get back on track. Is this realistic? Is this going to happen? And on the third morning, we started it and we realized like, we want this so bad, but realistically, it's not going to happen. There's no way we're going to be able to make it there in this day with the daylight that we have. It's just not going to be feasible. So we unfortunately, you know, made the decision to get off, but you know, even now thinking about it, I do think it was the right decision. It was hard.
I mean, and it's, you don't want to second guess yourself, right? You know, You made the decision that you needed to make at the time. And then also you don't want to be miserable and like, you know, hiking, you want to enjoy it. You want to enjoy the experience, which I think you still did. An amazing experience. But there's no sense in kind of making it miserable either and pushing yourself.
Yeah. That was something we kind of realized also, because, you know, like the first day you're kind of all on the adrenaline of the trip and, you know, everything's new and beautiful. And then, you know, by the second day, you know, because we had to be, you know, at certain places by certain times in order to make it. And, you know, we realized like we're not being able to take in the scenery. We can't take the breaks that we want to take. We can't do what we want to do. And even by the time we made it to camp, like it was so beautiful, but we were so tired and our campsite was up this hill that we were like, no, if we walk down this hill, we're not making it back up again tonight. Like, so we just kind of realized like 8 days, yeah, it's doable, but not for where we're at and not if we want to actually enjoy the trail. Like if you actually want to like sit and enjoy it. That just wasn't going to happen. We definitely want to try it again, but 9 days, preferably 10 days, would be, I think, the perfect amount of time for us to actually enjoy the experience.
So you decided on that, what was it, the third day then to turn around?
Yeah.
So you turn around and you're probably processing a bunch of things as you're going back. But then I think something also very wonderful and beautiful happened during the trip.
So that morning, there was a lot of crying, I would say, within that first 2 hours. At first, I was crying because I was super upset that we were turning back. And then I was crying because I was so happy because Ben ended up proposing. So that definitely made like the whole day just a complete turnaround. We were at Indian Bar and I was still a little bit pouty. I was just like, oh, like kind of in a bad mood, like turning back, but at least we got this beautiful scenery. Because for those that don't know, Indian Bar is this beautiful, just rocky gravel bar area located like nestled right in the valley of the mountains. And there's tons of wildflowers all over. There's this beautiful waterfall. And we were standing right next to the river. And, you know, I felt him tap like behind me and I turned around and he was down on one knee with a ring. And it was a ring from his parents. So it was like a family ring, which just made it really extra special. So it definitely made the whole day and like the whole trip. Like I couldn't be upset when something that wonderful happens.
And you had no idea it was coming.
No, I definitely didn't know.
So I'm glad you still got to, have that moment in such a beautiful place too.
And it was really nice because there was nobody else around. So it was just us in this beautiful area. So it definitely made like just the whole rest of the trip. It was just like, well, I don't care. We're getting married. I was just so excited.
So then you had a few more days. Did you just hang out in the area? What did you end up doing with your time? Do day hikes?
So we had talked about it, but we kind of felt, so the way we were looking at it, we felt like if it were any other time where COVID wasn't a thing, we would definitely stay. And we were like, well, we could explore, we could drive to like Olympic National Park, stuff like that. Like there's so much to do right in around Seattle. But when we were thinking about it, we were like, I mean, with COVID, this isn't really the time to be playing tourist right now. We just kind of felt bad. Like the only reason we even flew out here was just because we got these like once in a lifetime permits. If it were anything else, we probably wouldn't have gone still. So we just kind of felt like, I don't know, is it really the responsible thing to do to be, you know, traveling around? And I know at that time, Olympic had closed certain areas of the park because of like overcrowding. So it just didn't feel right. So it took a while, like almost 2 hours of phone calls, but we were able to finally rearrange our flights, our hotel, our rental car. It was a lot of phone calls, but we were able to rearrange everything and we actually flew back early that very next morning. So it was just kind of like a huge whirlwind of like 24 hours from being literally on the trail and then back home in less than 24 hours. It was just like, it was really just a mind warping perspective.
Well, you were talking about the overcrowding and different things. And I know you are a big advocate of Leave No Trace too. Were you seeing, I guess, on the trail, were you seeing the impact of so many people? I mean, I understand why the National Park Service has to do that for Wonderland because of the risk of, you know, having too many people damaging the trail and so on.
Yeah. Thankfully, for the most part, I'd say everyone is pretty good. There is very, very minimal litter anywhere along the trail. I would say for the most part, it was mainly just around like those more like the big trail heads, you know, where everyone's parking, which I mean, I wish it wasn't there, but I knew mentally going in, like it's going to be there around those areas. But thankfully on like the more deserted areas, there wasn't a lot of litter. I would say for the most part, everyone that we came across was pretty respectful. As far as, people weren't like just tromping off in wildflowers. People were very respectful. They had like buffs or masks on to pull up when you walked by. So for the most part, but we also didn't go up into Paradise or some of those other incredibly populated areas. So I can't speak to, you know, some of the more heavily trafficked places, but thankfully from what we saw though, people for the most part were very respectful of the areas that they were in.
So is the Wonderland Trail still on your bucket list? Do you think you're going to try again?
Yeah, it's definitely on the bucket list. We talked about, you know, like when would we do it? And at this point, it's one of those like, yeah, like I'd love to do it next year, but there's just so many things that I want to do that it's like, I have no idea when that's going to happen, but I definitely will be coming for it again.
And I know because of COVID, like you were saying, I mean, it is kind of hard to plan ahead or to think about, well, are we going to be able to travel freely, you know, next year even? So what are your thoughts right now about any travel or hiking, anything local or any kind of smaller trips?
So right now we are planning to do the Superior Hiking Trail next year. So that's like a 300-mile trail that goes through Minnesota, like kind of on the border. So that's our plan right now. We actually, I don't know if you're familiar with the Trek. They like have riders and stuff like that. So we actually got a riding ambassadorship, I guess, with them next year. So we're going to be riding for the Trek about our Superior Hiking Trail trip. So I'm incredibly, incredibly excited for that. We're going to be doing it September into October. So we'll be hoping for all those beautiful fall colors of the Midwest. So
yeah,
I'm
very
beyond
cool.
Excited.
And I mean, that's great that you're going to be blogging about it because you do blog. And so tell the listeners a little bit about where they can read some of your writings.
Yeah. So I just started it this year. It's called Lost and Found Outdoors. Basically, I go over a lot of Midwest trails. I have a piece up about pretty much everything in Cuyahoga Valley. I live like 15 minutes from the park, so I'm like a huge super fan. So I'm like always writing about that park. I have a piece up about our Wonderland Trail. So I'm definitely trying to put more in there. Lost and Found Outdoors. And then we actually just started, I haven't even officially opened it yet, but I will this week, our YouTube channel. Where I did make two videos over our Wonderland Trail trip, actually. So I'll be posting those sometime this week. I don't know when, but I finally just finished editing those. So I'm very excited to finally get that up as well. And that's Lost and Found Outdoors on YouTube also.
So you think you'll likely do some vlogging or maybe, you know, or just some video compilations for Superior Hiking Trail?
Yeah, I definitely want to. It's been, it's just kind of fun. You know, it's just like a little side project. It's just like, oh, it's just kind of fun. Also like getting home and a picture is great, but something about a video, it's just kind of like, oh, like, yeah, I was there. I don't know. It just feels a little more, I don't know, exciting to look at a video.
Okay. So you have the blog, you have the channel that will come out. How else can people follow you and where can they kind of find you on social media?
So I'm on Instagram at Lost and Found Outdoors as well. Other than that, that's pretty much it. I just have the YouTube channel coming out, the blog, and then Instagram. Also, I would just check out Women Who Explore. If you're a woman and you love the outdoors, I'm an ambassador for them. So in Ohio, especially, we have an event coming up this Friday, actually, with Green Girl Gang. So if you're in Ohio, Northeast Ohio, definitely check that out.
All right. And so Women Who Explore, and I know you also gave a shout out to Women of the Wild Midwest, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so tell the listeners a little bit about that group.
So they are a Midwest based group, pretty much just trying to bring more attention to the outdoors and the recreation in the Midwest. And not just the recreation, but also like the local businesses and really just everyone that is in this community. You know, the Midwest has so much to offer, but I feel like we get overlooked so much for other areas. So they're a Midwest-based group. They're supposed to be hosting an event this October, their second big meetup. But unfortunately, because of COVID, that got canceled. But I think they're doing a virtual meetup event with this year. So it's definitely exciting. It's nice to have a group of women, especially in the Midwest, you can kind of connect to and learn different things because we all have, you know, different passions and experiences. So it's a great community.
Yeah, they are definitely on my list to get more involved with as a Midwesterner myself, that I should,
oh, yeah.
I should be doing that. So thank you, Sarah, for sharing your experiences with me and the listeners. And again, congratulations on your engagement. I know you have a lot to plan with that and for hiking. I look forward to hearing more and following your adventures and seeing what happens.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks again, Sarah, for sharing your story with listeners. Don't forget to check the show notes so you can connect with Sarah and learn more about her adventures. And speaking of some additional adventures, I wanted to let you know that I will be bringing back some of the Sunday episodes, highlighting some stories that are 30 minutes or less. So be on the lookout for that in the near future. As always, I appreciate your support. Please leave me a 5-star rating and a review. It really helps get this podcast seen by more people, which means more listeners and the ability to get more content to you. If you know someone who you think would be a good guest, or you just want to drop me some feedback, you can connect with me at The Hike Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or email me hikepodcast@gmail.com. So until next time, see you on the trail.